Hey everyone, David here. Wanted to tell you about a company that makes some really beautiful Middle Earth-inspired products. Actually, I wish I had discovered OSHA slings when my daughter was little and I was using a lot of different baby slings and carriers. They sent me one of their Ancients of Gondor Ithildan baby carriers. Honestly, the design of this carrier is cool as hell. The quality is impeccable. It's a really smart design and super easy to use. I wish I had this when I needed it. I would have loved to show off my dad nerd cred at the time. But they also sent me a really nice blanket, the Misty Mountains Throw. And now, that same daughter, she monopolizes it whenever she's on the couch. It's beautiful, just the right weight. It's brushed cotton, so it's breathable and keeps us really cozy. We've been having a lot of cold weather lately, so we're always fighting over who gets to use it. A little about OSHA. They're a family-owned Scottish company. They've been handcrafting products since about 2010. Everything's ethically sourced and made in their solar-powered workshop. Check out their website. They've got a bunch of information about their sustainability practices. That's something that's really important to me. And they have this huge line of official Lord of the Rings products. They're making baby carriers, throws, scarves, mugs, tea towels, and the designs are stunning. Like, go check out the website right now. There's a link in the show notes. New customers get 10% off with the code LoreHounds. Go to oshaslings.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of 11zs, the movie podcast that we do once a month, where we watch a movie that was voted on by Patreon and Supercast subscribers. Now, this is actually the June 11zs, even though it's the second 11zs we've done this month. We are catching up because May we were behind with Andor and everything. We did the French Connection. Make sure you go check that out. That was David's Gene Hackman Film Fest. Had a great time. And we've had a tie this month, so we're going to be doing two movies head-to-head. Those movies were Isle of Dogs and The Royal Tenenbaums, both Wes Anderson movies, and the runner-up was The Darjeeling Limited. David, would you like to talk about poll results?
Sure, I can do that. We had 20 votes, which is still a little bit lower than we could be at. So our polling activity has dropped off for a little bit. I guess it's average. I mean, we've had some 20s in the past. We've had some 30s. So we've had some high watermarks. So I think that was what maybe is throwing me off. We had 7 votes for Isle of Dogs, 7 votes for The Royal Tenenbaums, and 6 votes for The Darjeeling Limited.
Very close, folks. Every vote counts. Every vote counts in the Lorehounds elections. So, we've got these two movies head-to-head. This intro, this first part of the podcast is going to be on the public feed. And then the main discussion will be paywalled behind our Patreon and Supercast subscriptions. So if you want the full discussion, this is a taste of 11zs for you. And you can get that in our subscription services in the link tree in the show notes. Alicia, give me a log line for Royal Tenenbaums. And then David, give me the Isle of Dogs.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Aye, aye, Captain.
General John is here. Admiral John is on the bridge of his Star Destroyer.
Okay, so this is the text that David inserted. Royal Tenenbaum and his wife, Etheline, had 3 children who were all extraordinary geniuses in their youth. Virtually all memory of their brilliance was subsequently erased by 2 decades of betrayal, failure, and disaster, most of it generally considered to be their father's fault. When Royal returns, claiming terminal illness, the family reunites under one roof for an unexpected winter of reconciliation, revelation, and redemption.
And then in 2018, we have the animated feature Isle of Dogs, set in a dystopian future Japan. When canine flu spreads across Megasaki City, Mayor Kobayashi banishes all dogs to Trash Island. When 12-year-old Atari crash lands on the island searching for his beloved guard dog, Spots, he encounters a pack of alpha dogs who help him navigate the wasteland while uncovering a conspiracy that's threatens both species.
Oh boy, we've got quite the matchup here. So I actually think I do want to keep this relatively spoiler-free on the hot takes and everything. Mm-hmm. So David, can you give your hot take?
Sure. I think, so I watched Royal Tenenbaum's kind of as a guess, like, oh, well, maybe it's going to win. So I was like, oh, what the heck? I might as well watch all three of them. We've started Darjeeling, but I haven't finished it yet. And it's interesting because Rushmore is one of my favorite Wes Anderson movies. And I really felt like I was watching a very Rushmore-like movie. And then I checked the dates and it's like, oh yeah, that's true. They're just like,
right, this was just that era. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it was very Wes Anderson. I can say that. It was well acted. It was well directed. The production quality is great. The sets are fabulous. It feels very, I was really at home in the Tenenbaum house and all the different rooms and the floors and everything. And I think it feels like this is when Wes Anderson really cements his vision and his voice. Rushmore, I didn't see Bottle Rocket. I've never seen Bottle Rocket. So Rushmore like really set out a lot of cornerstones, and it was new and it was fresh and it was different. And this is the point where it feels like Wes Anderson is almost settling into himself, and a lot of his major themes and character beats that he likes to explore, and a certain cadre of actors all start to get involved. And so, it just really felt like him cementing himself. I'd never seen Isle of Dogs, so I was pretty excited to see it. And I was really enjoying it up until about 2/3 of the way, or not the mid, I don't know if it was the midpoint or not. I was doing some, Alicia, side note, I was doing some, a little bit more research on that script writing technique of the midpoint or the plot or the pivot
point.
Oh,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like it's a very well-known thing. It's just not at the 1 hour mark. Some people, I think, were just talking about it around the 1 hour mark. And I picked up on that.
I guess because movies are usually 2 hours long.
Right. If you have a three act play and you've got 120 minutes and, you know, whatever, you at the midpoint. But you know, different movies can break up these pivot points, right? It's where the action changes and the stakes for the characters get ramped up, or the new world is revealed and whatever. So they can be, you know, in a lot of different places, but it's somewhere like when that, at one of those pivot points, I think it was around, maybe it was around, something to do with the dog spot. I kind of was like, oh, okay, I can see the rest of this movie now. And I was like, oh, this is what's going to happen. I have a sense from seeing enough Wes Anderson movies of how the rest of this is going to play out. And then I was just sort of along for the ride for the rest of the movie. So I wasn't as excited as when I started out. That said, I have like 8 pages of notes because there's so many homages and references. He's taken stuff directly out of other movies, a particular musical score he's pulled up. And so it's this great bouillabaisse sort of mishmash, you know, kitchen soup, throw it all in kind of thing. But it's really exceptionally put together. The sound design is exceptional. There's a bunch of cool, there's a weird environmental sort of thematic running through here. There's a great thing around mystical pathways, you know, using the, and I know we're not going to talk specifics, but this cable car transportation system that operates in the world. There's this really interesting thing that it sort of mirrors a Japanese morality play, like No Theater. I did some research on that and how the movie and the, you know, mirrors some of those traditional aesthetics. And it's, you know, Anderson with, is it stop motion? How is this? It's not claymation.
I think it is stop motion.
It's stop motion. It's exceptional in its, its delivery. And
the fur, the way the fur waves in the wind. I kept admiring that. Yeah.
There's the overhead shot of the sushi making. Like, that was just incredible.
I hated that, but that's because they were cutting up live animals, and that's, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's fair. But visually. Well,
they were clay live animals, so you're okay.
Yeah, no, this is not like, it's not like it's Old Boy, where he really did eat live octopi, four of them.
I don't know. I guess I don't know the reference, but anyway.
I don't know this either.
Oh, it's...
Why are they eating log? And it's, by the way, it's octopuses. There is no octopi word.
So, okay.
Really? Common misconception.
This is a weird plate of shrimp moment, and that's a Repo Man reference around concurrent, or around coincidence. I was just having this same conversation about Greek and Latin endings. Was being had by a bunch of fourth and fifth graders yesterday at the ice cream social at the end of the school year. A whole bunch of people went out to this diner that was having a special ice cream party for everybody. And there was a conversation about this exact point and about Greek and Roman suffixes, if I can say that word. So
it is indeed octopuses, even though that sounds way worse.
Okay, that's a lesson learned. Thank you. And the movie that I'm talking about, it's a super famous Park Chan-wook movie, just a really iconic action movie, kind of originated the hallway fight trope.
Okay.
But I personally intensely dislike it for a couple reasons. And one is that they actually had the lead actor eat live animals on film.
Okay, on screen. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Anyway.
Anyway, the animation sequence was incredible. And I wasn't even thinking about the fish part of it, but like the latter parts of it, making the boxes and everything, and wrapping everything. So just a really extraordinary film in its presentation and its sound design and musical special effects and concept, really super interesting. And then it just falls right into a Wes Anderson movie. And then I was just like, okay. Just go on for the ride and, you know, not be surprised by any of the ending. So
yeah, I personally don't even want to talk about Isle of Dogs that much because I'm like, it's very visually beautiful. The score is great. It's charming in a lot of ways, but I just don't care about it that much. Like the main plot didn't really have me going that much because you know it's going to work out in the end.
So well, the I'm same like, with for me, it was the same with the Tenenbaums. I was really uninterested in the Tenenbaums. And
see, I love the Royal Tenenbaums because that's nostalgia. Like the emotional journey of, no, I watched the Royal Tenenbaums like 2 years ago. Like I,
oh, really?
It's not nostalgia.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, I just enjoy like a good character emotional journey. Whereas the characters felt a lot more, except Chief had a lot of character development, but most of the characters felt very much just like devices. And I think that's true in the Royal Tenenbaums too, but I don't know, maybe because it's real people, it feels less kitschy to me.
Have you ever seen Rushmore?
I have.
Okay.
And I think Rushmore is just, you know, it's less good than the peak Wes Anderson. It's like you were saying, he was like starting to figure out his way.
Yeah, it's early Wes Anderson, right?
Yeah. And I think Wes Anderson has like different like figures he brings into a story to fit his formula, and that's what we're going to focus on in the second part of this conversation. But before we get there, Alicia, what are your hot takes?
Yeah, I've always been watching his movies, I guess probably since like the Royal Tenenbaums, and then went back. So the Royal Tenenbaums is one that, because it was just so, for me, it's not just nostalgia. It is, because I went hard for this for this Wes Anderson Film Fest. There were three features I had not seen of his and a handful of shorts. So I watched it all and now I'm all caught up. Plus I rewatched the Darjeeling Limited just because I really like that one. And obviously rewatched Royal Tenenbaums. But Royal Tenenbaums is one that I in college watched over and over with my friends. So, cause that's when it came out. It was like what cemented Wes Anderson in my mind. And since it's with exceptions like for me, the Darjeeling Limited and the Grand Budapest Hotel. Those I love those two, but often I find that his movies are prettier than they are human. If that makes sense,
mm-hmm. I think I would apply that to his latter films.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
his earlier films are pretty plain overall. Mm-hmm. I would say.
Well, I wouldn't call Royal Tenenbaums plain, but I mean, Bottle Rocket
compared to say like What's the one that came out? Asteroid City. Like, that's hyper-colorized, where Tenenbaums and Rushmore are shot pretty straightforwardly.
Sure.
Yeah, they don't over-colorize.
I personally consider the Grand Budapest Hotel, like, the pinnacle of Wes Anderson movies. Like, he did everything he does in every other movie in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
And that one is just so thematically colored.
Yeah.
So I think, what you're saying, David.
I didn't get to rewatch that one. But now I want to. Now I'm like, oh, I just want to go back and rewatch the other ones I didn't. But I think the Darjeeling Limited is my favorite because it's the most emotionally raw in a lot of ways.
Right. So
the Royal Tenenbaums, I saved that for last, and it was as good as I remember. Like, the only ding I would really give it is, you know, his later movies, like Isle of Dog, is accused of exoticism, and I don't think that that's a fair critique. You know, I went through and read the perspective of a bunch of people who, you know, grew up in Japan, and they really applauded. He had a Japanese co-writer for that one, and they really applauded the nuance that the Japanese side was handled with. So I think it's okay for, you know, him to make a film that's set in another country, and same for Darjeeling Limited. The Royal Tenenbaums does have exotic characters just for the sake of a joke. I think that's showing its age in that way, but that's genuinely my only complaint, just having rewatched it last night and this morning.
Right, right. I see you're accusing it of ageism for having Gene Hackman, right? Yeah. that's what you're doing. No.
I like how this is a way for the voters to sneak in an extra Gene Hackman Film Fest round.
that was my doing. I was taking out of Properly Howard's bacon wrap thing, where they hop from one actor to another this season.
Well, you did it.
To start with bacon to get back to bacon.
You did it.
So now we would have to figure out a crossover actor between one of these three films and Alicia's next round of picks. So if we wanted to stay consistent, we could try. We could try.
All right. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know that the timelines line up. So Isle of Dogs, first time watching it, I think, you know, the animation was gorgeous. It was an interesting story. It was also just felt like not entirely geared toward me. Some of his films feel more geared toward me than others, which is fine. That's great. I think, you know, going back and rewatching a bunch in a row, I think there is some more variety than I give him credit for.
Yeah, he has the familiar tropes, but those tropes, I always say, you know, I defend tropes because they are just colors on the palette for the artist to paint with. Mm-hmm. And I do think he uses them for different characters. Actually, watching these two movies, I'm thinking one of the weaknesses of his later era is he got so big he was able to get these huge ensemble cast of huge actors.
Yeah.
And then all of the characters become shallower because there's just not enough time to develop them. Mm-hmm. Whereas Royal Tenenbaums is really not that huge of a cast. No. Isle of Dogs, I actually felt like it was harder to get to know the dogs and whatnot because there was more going on.
Hmm. Yeah, I kept looking up who was whose voice because some of those guys' voices sound the same. And
I know.
I was like, wait, is Spots actually... No, sorry.
Well, I would even push back a little bit further, go back to Rushmore, and you've got a couple of big stars, you've got a couple of early career stars, and then you got a bunch of quasi-unknowns that he uses later.
Yeah.
So for me, that's one of the things that hit about Rushmore so well was like, wow, who are these people acting the hell out of, you know, what they're doing right next to Bill Murray, right? Yeah. Bill Murray walks on screen and he just dominates, right? Because he's Bill Murray. And I think that was one of the and Jason Schwartzman is in a very early role as well.
Yeah.
And so for me, Rushmore was like fresh and interesting, and the music and all of the things that Wes Anderson has perfected over the years. To me, when you unwrapped Rushmore that first time, it was like, wow, like what is this? And now Wes Anderson just cranks it out like in his sleep. Like he's like Paul McCartney of music.
He's just a victim of his own success, right?
Completely.
Like he can call up everybody in the industry and they're all like, yeah, I'll be in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I got two lines of dialogue. I'm in. Yeah.
Right. Right. Like, what was it? Steve Carell had like two lines. And you're like, you got Steve Carell to come in for two lines in Asteroid City.
I mean, but that's an easy job for them. It was interesting to go. I went back and I watched because I had never seen his first film was a short called.
Oh, a short. Yeah.
A short called Bottle Rocket. And
then he expanded
that into the feature called Bottle Rocket. So I went back.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a two-stage rocket, if you will.
Yeah, so basically, it's funny. The short is in black and white, but they is like filmed in the same location they had. It's just Owen and Luke Wilson and a
Holy
third
shit.
Guy.
Oh, I'm looking at the page for it right now, and I didn't realize that those guys were in his first movie.
Yeah, I think that's how they all got their start. Yeah, that's it's funny that he often has the Wilson brothers in his movies, but I don't think they've ever played brothers. He always has like they're always somebody else's brothers. But anyway, it was really interesting to see how that is very like stripped back. And you can see there's a bit of the humor, like he does this shtick where the character's talking and then it cuts location and the character like continues the sentence as if they haven't changed location. Mm-hmm. you can see he's starting to play around. And then Rushmore, I didn't rewatch it this time, but I do like it. And it is where like I think it starts to become much more, you're starting to see what Wes Anderson is as a filmmaker.
Exactly.
And then for me, the Royal Tenenbaums is he's like, boom, I found it. This
exactly.
Is,
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Same. I'm on the exact same page as that.
All right. Well, we've got a lot to talk about, but before we take a break and kick out the public feed people again, you can find that in the link tree in the show notes. We will just give some stats here that David has helpfully put out for me. So this was Royal Tenenbaums was written by Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson. Speaking of Wilson twins, they're not twins, brothers, directed by Wes Anderson. Yeah. Directed by Wes Anderson, starring Gene Hackman, Angelica Houston, Ben Stiller, Gwyneth Paltrow, Luke Wilson, Owen Wilson, Bill Murray, Danny Glover, and Alex Baldwin as the narrator. I didn't realize he was a narrator. Budget was $21 million, and the box office was $71.4 million. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
And the ratings and reviews, 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, I guess 89% audience score.
Mm-hmm.
Metacritic, 76 and 8.0, and Letterboxd, 4.1.
So I think, pretty consistent there, right? Everybody, they're all hitting the board in the same spot.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And then Isle of Dogs was, again, written by Wes Anderson and also Roman Coppola, oh gosh, Jason Schwartzman and Kunichi Nomura, directed by Wes Anderson, voice cast Bryan Cranston, Koyu Rankin, Ed Norton, Liev Schreiber, Bill Murray, Bob Balaban, Jeff Goldblum, Scarlett Johansson, Tilda Swinton, and Frances McDormand. Budget was $64 million and grossed only $64.2 million worldwide.
Wow.
So fell pretty flat. And ratings, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes with 87% audience score, Metacritic 82 and 8.0, and Letterboxd 4.1. I'm pretty much with these ratings. Well, I'm with the ratings with the audience. I think it was not as strong a movie as Rotten Tomatoes.
I agree. It did get two Oscar nominations for Best Animated Feature and Best Score, and Royal Tenenbaums got one for Best Original Screenplay.
Mm. Oh, I guess
which
I
Owen Wilson helped write.
Right. Interesting.
That's crazy to me. I mean, why not? But
all right, I'm going to skip our test because there's two movies and that's going to take 20 minutes.
I don't think we can apply any of the tests.
Yeah, there's not.
Okilis, Anderson, Lopez.
I mean, maybe you could do like the Anderson verse, but
I think you'd have to
do a special one. We want to restrict him. Yeah.
You'd have to do a whole special one.
Do you think, what about Violence?
Violence? Both of them are actually,
I mean, there's Isle of Dogs. There's some animal violence.
Yeah, and Isle of Dogs.
There's nothing that made
me. You might not like it.
Yeah, there's nothing that makes me. I mean, and I love. Well, we can't talk about spoilers, but anyway, the way that a lot of violence is handled in Isle of Dogs is really nicely done visually. I like the comical way that it's handled. So, but yeah, I don't think I would say Bukila scale zero for me. Like, neither above nor below.
Royal Tenenbaums is totally fine.
Totally.
All right. Let's take a break here. This is going to be the end of the podcast if you are on the public feed, but you can come back and you can listen to it, the rest of it on the Patreon or Supercast feed just by going to the link tree in the show notes. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds.
Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.